The Mesa City Council meeting for Monday, November 2nd, 2009. My name is Mayor Scott Smith, and as always, it's an honor and a privilege for me to serve and to conduct this meeting this evening. We'll begin this evening with an invocation by Vice Mayor Kyle Jones, after which we'll have the Pledge of Allegiance led by Scout Jewel Egan from Troop 355. Please rise for the invocation and the pledge.
Our Father in heaven, we do thank thee for this opportunity to meet this evening as a city council and to discuss matters pertaining to the future and well-being of our fine community. We pray for thy guidance and direction as we make decisions and as we discuss those important issues. We pray for all those who serve throughout our community, especially those who volunteer and give so much service in our behalf. We pray, Father, for those who are serving across the seas to protect and preserve freedom. Again, we humbly pray for thy Spirit to join with us this night in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Thank you, Jill. Please be seated. From time to time, we would like to take the opportunity to recognize those in our city, and especially those who work in our city government, for their successes that they've had. We have a lot of good things going on, as I've said consistently, in our community. And this week, we'd like to recognize one of those good things that are going on. We have a presentation by Willie Black from our Solid Waste Management Department, he's the department head, regarding some awards that the Solid Waste Association of North America Arizona chapter gave to our solid waste department. So, Willie, would you like to come on up? Introduce us to the good things that are going on.
Thank you, Mayor and council members. Pleased to be here this evening, have the opportunity to share these awards with you. The first one I want to talk about is the Municipality of the Year we were awarded. And the award we were awarded by our peers for our continued leadership in the solid waste field and our promoting of recycling and proper disposal. And it's our way of building a better Mesa through recycling. We've got a number of programs in Mesa, Mesa Public Schools partnerships with the Girl Scouts. We've got our document shredding event and a number of things that we continue to show leadership. But we can't do those great things without having great people in the solid waste department that help move those things along. And the first one I'd like to bring up is Danny Ochoa, who Danny was recognized as the Administrator of the Year. Danny's been with our department for over 24 years now. He leads our residential collection section, does a great job providing customer service to our customers every day, and he continues to provide a safe work environment for his employees and does a great job for us. The next one I'd like to bring up is Kelly Collins. Kelly's our recycling and community outreach supervisor. Kelly's area is bringing forward all the new programs from the Recycling Monkey to the Girl Scout Partnership. Does a great job with moving forward with all of our recycling programs. And I'd like to recognize both of them as well as our department this evening.
Thank you very much. Congratulations. And thank you for your service and thank you for all that you do. Appreciate that. Next item on the agenda is to take action on the consent agenda. The consent agenda will be read in by... There he is, Mr. Kevin Christopher.
Good evening. All citizens are encouraged and permitted to speak on agenda items. If you're interested in speaking on an agenda item, please fill out a blue card in the back of the room and give it to the city clerk. When the council considers the item, you'll be called to the podium to provide your comments. Mayor and council members, these are the items on the consent agenda. All items listed with an asterisk will be considered as a group by the city council and will be enacted with one motion. There will be no separate discussion of these items unless a council member or citizen request, in which event the item will be removed from the consent agenda and considered as a separate item. If a citizen wants an item removed from the consent agenda, a blue card must be completed and given to the city clerk prior to the council's vote on the consent agenda. Item 2, approval of minutes of previous meetings as written. Item 3A, act on liquor license for Christ the King Church one-day event, November 21st, 1551 East Dana Avenue. Item 3B, act on liquor license for the Dobson Association one-day event, November 14th, 2455 West Laguna Azul. Item 3C through 3G, act on liquor license for Knights of Columbus, All Saints Council, 9485 1534 North Wrecker Road for one-day events, November 7th, December 5th, January 9th, February 6th, and March 6th. Item 4A, act on contract to increase dollar limit for residential refuse containers. Item 4B, act on contract to purchase replacement firefighting nozzle tips. Item 4C, act on contract to purchase Google search hardware and software for city's intranet site. Item 4D, act on contract to purchase two replacement heavy-duty construction-grade trucks. Item 4E, act on contract to purchase one SUV for the police department. This is fully funded from the asset forfeiture RICO funds. Item 4F, act on contract for pawnbroker's secondhand store information database. Item 4G, act on contract for fire extinguishers. Item 4H, act on contract to purchase system furniture for Mesa City Court, fully funded from the law enforcement capital bonds. Item 4I, act on contract for Ray Road and Haas Road improvements. This project funded with the adopted fiscal year 09-10 street, water, and wastewater bond capital programs. Item 4J, act on contract for Fraser Electric Substation upgrade. This project funded with the adopted fiscal year 09-10 electric capital program. Item 4K, act on contract for excess liability insurance. Item 4L, act on contract for property insurance. Item 4M, act on contract for aviation insurance. Item 4N, act on contract for RWCD irrigation pipeline on Ryan Road. This project funded with the adopted fiscal year 09-10 wastewater capital program. Item 4O, act on contract for Alston House rehabilitation. Funding available in the approved fiscal year 09-10 community development capital program, CDBG funds, the State Heritage Fund grant, and cash donations. Item 5A, act on resolution approving Mesa Falcon Field Airport Master Plan. Item 5B, act on resolution approving intergovernmental agreement between the Town of Gilbert, Maricopa County Department of Transportation, and the City of Mesa for construction of Power and Pecos intersection improvement projects. Item 5C, act on resolution approving intergovernmental agreement with ADOT for reconstruction of Southern Avenue, Val Vista Drive to Greenfield Road, funding available from the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. Item 5D, act on resolution approving intergovernmental agreement with ADOT for arterial overlays on Sossaman, U.S. 60 to Southern Avenue, Higley Road, U.S. 60 to Southern Avenue, and Harris Drive, Southern Avenue to 8th Avenue, funding available from the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. Item 5E, act on resolution approving intergovernmental agreement with ADOT for reconstruction on Higley Road, Southern Avenue to University Drive, funding available from the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. Item 5F, act on resolution approving intergovernmental agreement with ADOT for reconstruction on Brown Road, Record to Power Road, and University Drive, Val Vista Drive to Greenfield Road, funding available from the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. Item 5G, act on resolution approving intergovernmental agreement with ADOT for reconstruction on Alma School Road, Southern Avenue to Baseline Road, and Power Road, Broadway to Baseline Road, funding available from the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. Item 5H, act on resolution approving intergovernmental agreement with Gilbert Public Schools for one school resource officer. Item 5I, act on resolution approving intergovernmental agreement with the Arizona Criminal Justice Commission for training and equipment for the police department's DNA backlog reduction program. Item 5J, act on resolution approving memorandum of understanding with the United States Immigration and Customs Enforcement to allow detention officers and a detective assigned to the ICE task force to perform certain functions of an immigration officer. Item 6, introduction of the following ordinances and setting November 16, 2009 as the date of the public hearing on these ordinances. Item 6A, ordinance regarding Z09-17, 4800 to 5200 block of South Haas Road. This is for a rezone for establishment of the Gateway 202 Air Park Development Master Plan. Item 6B, ordinance regarding Z09-19, 1265 South Pima Road, rezoned for wholesale plumbing and HVAC equipment. Item 6C, ordinance regarding Z09-21, 7417 South Haas Road, rezoned for development of movie production studio. Item 6D, ordinance repealing Title V, Channel 12, Chapter 12 of the Mesa City Code related to massage establishments and adopting a new Title V, Chapter 12 that strengthens oversight of establishments. Mayor and council members, these are the items on the consent agenda.
Thank you, Kevin. Are there any items that a member of the council would like removed from the consent agenda? We have requests from the audience to remove three items from the consent agenda. Item 5A, approving the Mesa Falcon Field Airport Master Plan, is removed from the consent agenda. Item 5J, relating to the approving and authorizing the city manager to execute an MOU with the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, is off the consent agenda. And item 6D, related to the repealing of Title V, Chapter 12 of the Mesa City Code related to massage establishments, will be discussed separately also. Okay. I have a motion to approve the consent agenda from Councilmember Kavanaugh, a second from Vice Mayor Jones. Is there any discussion? I guess before we vote, I failed at the beginning of the meeting to recognize that Councilmember Summers is not with us tonight, nor is he participating via phone. He's out of town, so I apologize for missing that. Any discussion on the consent agenda? Please vote. The vote is 6-0 in the affirmative, with Councilmember Summers absent, and consent agenda is approved. Next item on the agenda is item 5A, which relates to approving of the Mesa Falcon Field Airport Master Plan and authorizing the city manager to execute documents that are included as part of the master plan. We have one citizen requesting to speak on this, Mr. Paul Knauth. I hope I didn't get that too wrong. Mr. Knauth, if you could state your name, restate your name. We already know your name.
My name is Paul Knauth.
Address in 3 minutes, sir.
You got it. Paul Knauth, 4227 East Hope Street. This is about this item for the Kaufman and Associates Master Plan. I have no problems with that plan. I have major problems with the map that was stuck on as an addendum, a map that was drafted 2 weeks ago without any public discussion. It was never in any of the master plan discussions that were held about Falcon Field. We were told in the press that this meeting tonight would have nothing to do with flight patterns, and in fact that map is entirely about flight patterns. This is an attachment on the map, and I don't know if you're familiar with it. This is a map that is required by the state law to protect home buyers, so that they don't buy a home under a intense flight training from flight schools or any kind of activity. When you sell your house, you must disclose this map to any potential buyer. The realtor must do it if you don't do it, and the realtor can be sued if they don't do it. This map expands the previous map to 20 square miles of Mesa. And it's kind of sneaky the way the map is put in nautical miles. You don't realize that those are much bigger than geographic miles, statute miles. 20 square miles. That's 15% of the area of Mesa under its corporate governance has been set aside for wide open training of flight schools. And we know the controversy over these flight schools. They're low altitude. They're very loud. They spew lead particles. They are an incredible safety hazard, which terrorize the people that live under them because they're so low. This now has moved to 20 square miles. There's been no public discussion of this. And people are going to have to disclose this. Now, if you're buying a house from me and I pull out a disclosure form and say, you recognize now you're under training patterns, you're under the pattern space of Falcon Field, does that diminish my home property value? Have you done an assessment? Did Kaufman do an assessment of what this does to the property values? This includes all of District 5. It extends now west of Gilbert Road. It goes east of Red Mountain. It goes down to Main Street. This includes District 1, 2, and all of 5. It's not just a District 5 problem anymore. No discussion's been on this. This is a tremendously important thing. It's being stuck on as a little rider onto something that has been discussed. And I would like to ask you tonight to table the map part of this plan. Go ahead and approve the one that deals with the construction at Falcon Field, with all the things that have been discussed among the public. But let's have a discussion. Who made this map? Why is it there? The local flight schools don't need it, the small ones. The regular pilots don't need it. Why is this being extended out to 20% of the area of Mesa? So I'm asking you to have an honest discussion about this. It's a question of trust of the city. You put out a map saying where there would not be flight training, and now you're changing the map enormously. No discussion, no input. And have you really thought it through? I ask you to do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Knopf. Appreciate that. Mr. Brady.
And I'm going to ask our airport director to come forward. And I think, Karen, what we need to understand is this map is required, again, as was stated, by the state of Arizona, but it is also developed in accordance with FAA guidelines, so that is the requirement that we follow those guidelines as far as demarcating the areas that we need to put under disclosure. So maybe you could just speak to those items, please.
Certainly. Thank you.
And Corrine, if you would explain what the map is, because I think there's some confusion as to what it actually identifies.
Certainly.
And what it does not identify. So if you could address that issue also.
Mayor, council members, the public airport disclosure map is in fact a requirement that the state of Arizona put into effect through statute several years ago. A public use airport in the state of Arizona is required to have one of these on file and on record with the state of Arizona real estate office. The disclosure map is actually established using FAA guidelines, specifically it's actually a map that shows the general area in which anyone who resides under that area or within that space needs to be aware that there could be aircraft flying over their homes.
And Crane, let's be specific. Is it any aircraft or only those involved in training?
It's any aircraft that could be flying to and from Falcon Field Airport.
And just so I understand, this map is meant to as a disclosure to homeowners and potential low homeowners, as I think Mr. Knauf mentioned, that airplanes could be flying over it. This is not a permission map, or my understanding is that it does not give anyone permission, any airplane permission, to fly. It does not establish any types of things. It just states that airplanes are, if you're going to live in this area, airplanes are probably going to be flying over you. And is that where the FAA guidelines come in, that it decides, since there is airplane activity under this the area assigned by the map, that there could be airplane flying over your house? It's not directed toward airplane operators or pilots or anything. It's directed toward homeowners and potential homeowners. Is that correct?
Yes, Mayor, that's absolutely correct. It's basically, again, the FAA criteria that is used is based upon the forecasts that are included in the master plan of anticipated aircraft operations for, in our case, Falcon Field, over the next 20 years. And the formula takes that projected number and establishes specifically what that area will include. But it is clearly not a map that is used for aeronautical purposes as far as a pilot is concerned. It is not a directive to tell pilots where they can and cannot fly. It is strictly a map that is used to disclose to property owners that if you are within this area, it is highly likely that you will experience aircraft flying over your home.
Okay. Vice Mayor has a question.
More direct to the point, and I think concern that was raised is, do we have limitations on the flight school of where they can and cannot fly? Is there a restriction to them? Because that's really the concern of the neighborhood. Of now they see this map and thinking, well, they could go anywhere inside that map. Mm-hmm. Do we have any limitations on the flight school as to where they, what flight pattern they should be using?
Well, the city recently accepted a set of recommendations from a task force that was put together earlier this year to address some of the noise and safety concerns that some of the residents had. And within those recommendations, there are some items that include certain types of traffic pattern adherence that they would like for pilots, not just the flight schools, but all of the pilots to adhere to. One that does specifically pertain to the flight schools is requesting that they use the north runway as much as possible, and also that they restrict the amount of flight training operations between the hours of 9 p.m. and 6 a.m., which is when the air traffic control tower is closed. But those are voluntary recommendations that we are in the process of working with the flight schools as well as the other pilots that use Falcon Field to implement those recommendations to the extent that they can possibly do it, keeping in mind that the number one priority is safety.
And how does that correlate with this map as far as the recommended flight paths?
The recommended flight paths are included within that general map, but the reason why the map does not show particular lines or arrows.
I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Yes, sir.
We need to clarify because I think you're contradicting what you said. If it's not for aeronautical, you talked about instructions to flight schools and to pilots, and then you said you tied the map to those instructions. And that sort of contradicts, I think, what was said before, which is this map is made as a reflection of what might happen, not a directive as to what will happen. So which one is it?
That is correct. It's a map that shows what might happen.
So,
America, isn't it clear to say, we don't tell the planes where to go. That's what the tower does.
That's
what the purpose of this map is, to tell individuals, this is the area based on the guidelines because of the patterns that are flown out of the airport as directed by the tower. And granted, we have been working with the tower to recommend other alternative patterns. Those patterns aren't dictated by the city, nor are they dictated by this map. This map is disclosing to the community is based on the activity levels that we expect over time and where the planes are flying today. This is the area of impact, and we're disclosing that to all property owners. Is that fair?
Mayor, council members, that is absolutely correct.
And I, you know, we're trying to get it up on the Elmo so we can show what this map is. When you say it's based on guidelines, and maybe we should wait till it comes up, I noticed on the map that there are equal equidistances from the runway, from the end of the runway, and from the side of the runways going out to create this box.
Right.
Are those the FAA guidelines that we're talking about?
Yes, that is correct. The specific formula is identified in, and I can quote you book and page here. If you can give me just a minute. It's a specific FAA. It's FAA order 7400-2G. And that, if you look in that particular FAA order, you will find the specific criteria that Kaufman Associates used in order to prepare this particular map.
And in this specific case, I believe on both ends of the runways, it extends out 2.5 nautical miles.
That's correct.
Which a nautical mile being 1.15 of an actual mile, so that's about 15% more, so it's like 2.75 nautical miles or 2.8 nautical or regular miles, I'm sorry.
Right.
And it looks like it goes 1.5 nautical miles, which would be about 1.7 regular miles, less than 2 miles, to the sides of the runways on each side. And now those are equidistant because of the FAA guidelines that Kaufman used?
That is correct. And that is because there could be times when there would end up being more traffic on the south runway, or there could be more traffic on the north runway, depending upon what the conditions are at the time. And so we're basically showing that you could have equal amounts of traffic off of both runways.
But there is that potential.
Right.
But once again,
that
what you're
correct.
Saying is that this does not establish.
No, what we're
I can understand why there's some confusion, because if you look at the map, it talks about traffic pattern airspace boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And I can understand how someone might look at that and say, this looks like these are established traffic patterns, What you're saying is that
you'll find this language, and I've pulled up this chart for all the other airports in the valley that are affected by this law, and you'll find same description everywhere.
Yeah.
What we're trying to do is within this box, if you would, and not that this box dictates it, but we're working with tenants, the tower, and everyone out there to try to get a pattern that has been worked out and is recommended by the task force that hopefully minimizes the impact on the neighborhood. So,
which is a separate process.
Separate
than
process,
what we're
talking
about
but,
right now.
Right.
Councilmember Kavanaugh, I think, had a question or comment.
Higgins.
Did I call you Councilmember Kavanaugh for the second time today?
Thank you, Mayor.
Dina, I'm so sorry.
I forgive you.
If that weren't the 15th time I'd done that, I would feel a little
better.
Better
than Mrs. Richens or something.
This is
like
true.
That. No offense. Okay.
Because I did that one time. I introduced her as Councilmember Richens and his wife,
okay.
Dina. Sorry about that.
Back to serious issues. Two things. The noise contours didn't change on this map between the new and the old.
That's correct.
And would you maybe like to explain what the difference from the old to... Yes.
Okay, can I clarify that? When you say between the new and the old, are you talking about the old master plan or the earlier draft of
the master plan? The draft of this master plan that's been in all the meetings.
Okay, that has remained the same, yes.
So is it possible for you to explain why you just added these two little sections.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a huge change. I mean, the west end and the north end are really in the same spot. We didn't make the whole box bigger. We added corners to the box.
Right. That was prompted by some discussion that we had at the previous city council study session, in which the council did take a very close look at the map that was originally put into the draft. And based upon that discussion, given the fact that as the airport continues to grow, we will most likely experience more traffic on the south runway, not so much because of training flights, but just because of corporate traffic and business traffic that will be coming into Falcon Field, that it was in the best interest of everyone, and certainly we talked with Kaufman Associates. They are completely on board with the discussion we had about being very clear to everyone in the community that, yes, if you are in those areas that weren't included in the original draft, the reality of it is that you will very, very possibly be impacted by traffic. So we wanted to just, you know, make it very clear to everyone so there would be no question down the road.
Councilmember Finter.
Thank you, Mayor. And I wanted to explain to the gentleman why I supported exactly what you just talked about there. I lived for about 20 years just north of University between Valvista and Greenfield. And my personal experience is that was frequently flown over a lot of air traffic. So I didn't see what I was supporting as an ability to expand this area. It was a kind of a reality check of what's been going on there for decades. And so that's why I supported those changes to that draft.
Thank you. And I think the reality is we're in catch-22 here. I mean, if we have airplanes that fly over houses and it's not underneath a disclosure, then the city gets in trouble for not disclosing. If we expand the disclosure to tell people airplanes are going to fly over, then people get upset because we've expanded the disclosure. And I think that in the study session, which we did spend quite a bit of time going over the details of this map, and this master plan has been out for many, many months, and the map was always in that, and there was the discussion in that the drafts of that master, at least the copies I've had, it was in it. And I'm assuming that those that you didn't give me a special copy. Councilmember Higgins, I know, has one. I think it behooves us to deal with reality, and the reality is that airplanes may fly over, as Councilmember Fenter said, areas of our city, and we need to let people know that airplanes may fly over. The city, and I think this is a misconception that I know in some of the correspondence I've had, where people believe that the city owns the airspace above the city. We do not. The city does not dictate where jet airplanes fly, nor do we have a whole lot of direct control or legal control over where small planes fly. That is governed by the federal government and specifically the Federal Aviation Administration. The city works very closely as, in many cases, an advocate for our citizens, for all parties in our citizens. And I think this is why the task force was so important, is we brought different interests in, because believe it or not, there are a lot of people who have different interests in airports. There are businesses, there are aviation, and certainly there are residents. And I believe our objective is to try to balance those interests and to serve as an advocate. When sitting before the FAA, we can go to the FAA and request that they change their procedures or establish procedures that have the minimal effect on our residents while still maintaining that balance between aviation, business, economic interests, and residents' interests. And so I appreciate everything that's been done by staff and the citizens who got involved in this task force, because it was really a demonstration in what citizen involvement is all about. They worked together. They didn't agree with each other, but they worked for many, many weeks to come up with something that they could feel comfortable with that was a balance. It's not perfect. Nothing rarely is, but it was a balance. It struck a fine balance. Councilmember?
Yeah, Mayor, I just want to say, in all fairness, this map that's included in the packet tonight was dated October 14th of 2009.
No, the one tonight. Right.
Tonight. And the previous one was April 3rd, 2008. So the gentleman said, we have changed it since the draft that has been floating around for a year or so.
And the change was to add?
Just those corners.
But the original map has been in the draft for a year and a half.
Yes.
Okay. All right. And I granted, when we talked about it in the study session, and I'll take blame for that because I was the one that brought it up and sort of asked why we did not expand the area to be a rectangular box, because I believe that we should err on the side of disclosure and letting people understand what Councilmember Fenter said. As a matter of fact, I don't know that your house would have been under that one if the one it was before. Would have been right outside of it. And yet we know that airplanes fly over that. Okay, thank you very much. Any other questions for Ms. Nystrom?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'll entertain a motion on item 5A. We have a motion to approve by Vice Mayor Jones. Do I have a second? We have a second from Councilmember Higgins. Any other discussion? Please vote. The vote is 6-0 in the affirmative, with Councilmember Summers absent, and the motion carries. The next item is item 5J. Is approving and authorizing the city manager to execute a Memorandum of Understanding, or MOU, with the United States Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, to allow holding facility detention officers and a detective assigned to the ICE task force to perform certain functions of an immigration officer. Just so everyone knows, this is frequently referred to as 287G authority. Mr. Brady. Oh, wait, but before you do that, I apologize. We have one citizen who wishes to speak on this, Mr. Mark Egan. Mr. Egan, if you could please state your address for the record, and you have 3 minutes, sir. Thank you.
Good evening. My office address is 1930 North Arboleda here in Mesa. I am an immigration attorney. I do not represent people in deportation and removal proceedings, but I am familiar with most aspects of legal immigration. I don't have any personal benefit that would be gained if the council was to deny this request to enter into a 287G agreement. Quite the contrary. The more difficulties the law, and particularly the immigration law, creates for immigrants, whether legal or illegal, the better things are for us lawyers. Often we lawyers are the only ones that benefit.
Saying is, if we screw things up, you are better off. I thought you guys were accused of screwing things up.
Well, what you said is exactly the point I'm trying to make.
Oh, okay.
The more the laws don't work, the more work there is for lawyers like me. I'm not here for my personal benefit. I'm here, at least not as an attorney. I am here for my personal benefit as a citizen of Mesa. I'm afraid my remarks are a little bit hastily prepared. I did copy an article from the Miami Herald, which actually an op-ed piece, that pretty well states everything that I wish I had eloquently put down. And there are copies for each of you available. But my main opposition to 287G is simply that it's not necessary, and that I think the purpose and the goal of Mesa Police is not to help the federal government enforce immigration laws. The purpose of the Mesa Police is to make the city safer, to reduce crime, to find the dangerous criminals, the people that are out there really hurting people, and making our city unsafe for everybody. And the 287G agreement does not accomplish the goal of making things safer. It may accomplish the goal of catching illegal immigrants, some of whom may be dangerous criminals, just like any large population will have dangerous criminals within it. But overall, rounding up illegals is not necessarily going to reduce crime. And here in the local area, we have recent experience that kind of bears that out. Over the past, 5 years or so, the city of Mesa and the city of Phoenix have not been involved in 287G agreements. These two cities have not had their police officers become deputies of the Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And yet, crime has gone down drastically. In contrast, the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office has been very ardent in their support of 287G. Sheriff Arpaio has boasted frequently of the tens of thousands of illegal immigrants that he has been able to round up because he participated in 287G. And yet, when you look at the crime statistics for those areas that are under county supervision, the crime has gone up. So although he is being successful in rounding up illegal immigrants, according to him, he is not being successful in suppressing crime. On the other hand, here in Mesa and over in Phoenix, where they have not been participating in 287G, they may not have rounded up as many illegal immigrants in general, but they have been very successful in reducing crime. And I think the reason for that is that although we may not feel as comfortable with people that don't look and sound like us, we may feel a little bit afraid if we walk into a group where, people are talking a funny language. I don't understand what they're saying. They're looking at me strange. We can feel uncomfortable. I've been in that situation myself. But those feelings of uncomfort don't necessarily mean that those people are criminals. They just mean that they're different and we haven't learned to understand each other yet. When policemen go out to do their job, I'm not a police officer, but what I understand is it is absolutely essential to have the cooperation of the community that you're serving. Whether that community includes illegal aliens or legal immigrants or is purely people whose genealogy goes back decades here in the United States. Without that cooperation, the police aren't going to have the witnesses that they need. They're not going to get the tips that they need if those very people that they're relying on to help them to do their job are afraid to come forward, even if they've been the victim themselves, because they know the police officer that comes to investigate, maybe even coming to help them, now is authorized to turn them in to the Immigration Service and have them deported.
Mr. Egan, thank you very much. We appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Vice Mayor.
Interesting as you made your comments, because you're making the very point that I have stated for years. And what we are doing is not giving authority to on-the-street beat officers. This is only for those who are in the intake facility, only those who are processing those who come in. It is very critical that our police officers are able to go into community and get leads and get people reporting. It's critical to the fundamental process of doing police work in a community. When people are afraid to talk, and as I read through the article you presented to us. That follows exactly what I've been discussing in Immigration Task Force with National League of Cities, all the things that we've heard from police chiefs around the country of how policing should be done. So what we're doing tonight is not giving the officer on a beat, the regular patrol officer, any authority in that regard. This is just for a limited number of officers who are in our intake facility to do the processing. And that needs to be very clear, and obviously, as you start into your speech, it became clear to me you didn't understand exactly what we were doing as a council, because all we're doing is taking care of the processing of those who commit crimes in our community, and those are the ones that we need to deal with in ICE. Our crime statistics have gone considerably down, and it is because of great police work. And great police work has to be done with the trust of a community, and that's what we've been doing.
And I think we need to further clarify, our officers have authority to arrest under immigration, under the policy which we adopted about 15, 16 months ago. Now, let's make that clear. You don't have to have 287G training in order to arrest a person. But the difference is somewhat technical and yet somewhat very significant. The fact is that as someone comes into our jail, this means a person who has been arrested under suspicion of a crime, not an immigration crime, but a crime. They, if there is suspicion that they are also here illegally, right now we must contact ICE in order to follow up on that, and ICE then comes in. The 287G training we're talking about is to allow our detention officers, as these people who have been arrested or brought into custody for criminal activity, to then process them without having to call ICE. So it creates a much more efficient operation, and it allows our police officers who serve in the jail facilities to not only look at someone who, once again, did I mention that they've been arrested for committing some crime, but they can follow up immediately right then and there in the jails, which is much different than training officers or giving them 287G to go out on the streets and use that in police activities. So this is limited to the jails, and it fits in with the type of activities that we prescribed in our policy that we enacted. Councilmember Higgins, or Finter, I'm sorry, you had your hand up.
Thank you, Mayor. And just wanted to share, I know Mr. Egan, I believe, is a resident of District 2, and have known him for many years, but as a counter, and you'll probably find out from the mayor that we usually don't do a back and forth in exchange on this. We just give you a chance, and then we give our opinions. But I wanted to tell you where I was coming from on this. I think there has been participation in 287G with Phoenix and others through the detention center at the sheriff's office. And the statistics we heard that there's been thousands of individuals been accused of crimes that have gone through the judicial system and then go through a deportation process. So it actually sounds pretty successful how it's currently being used. And I think the mayor did a great job of discerning what we're doing here today and why. But, you know, to give you a personal perspective, I'm not a xenophobe. My children are bilingual, speak Spanish. But I think there is the challenge in District 2, especially. I was driving to the office today to find in streets lined with immigrants, and I take no personal thing against them. I love all people. I try to do it right. But there are predator illegal immigrants that are preying on the immigrant community, and we have got to do something to address that area. I've floated the idea a couple of times of having a bilingual hotline for individuals to call from the immigrant community and be able to, look at things. We've had home invasions in District 2 quite a bit, and it's usually the illegal immigrant predator that's preying on those other immigrants. So this is, in my mind, a great step in the right direction. I would probably advocate for a little more stricter, more involvement. But I think this is a compromise as we work towards trying to find the answers to look at this in the community. And I have great respect for you and your opinion. I just wanted to give you a different view of that.
Thank you. I just wanted to make one concern I have is that as I read through the city council agenda, and then I read through the MOU itself, which is something that I guess only a lawyer would really want to sift through, But it does not make that distinction. It does not limit the agreement to detention only. It also authorizes, I don't recall.
Well, to answer your question, I believe 287G training is 287G training. You train officers. What we have determined by council policy and also by police policy is that we will limit the use of our 287G to our jailing facilities. And I'll give you a good example why that works. For example, most people don't realize that we have DUIs that come in, and many times it's a catch-and-release type of a process. And we have had issues where those who are here illegally, if they're cited or even found with DUI, if they're not jailed overnight, they have a tendency not to show up for their court hearing because of their immigration status. One of the things we like to do, because Mesa does have, and maybe this is something that people don't understand, is that we do have a holding facility. Many cities do not jail those who they arrest in their local jails. They take them to the county jail. What we do is that we will process many of the people, or most of the people that we arrest, that our police arrest, in our city facility, and then transfer them to the county facility. So we have stated that, for example, in these cases, we have the opportunity now to check their immigration status, because we found that that's an area of concern, because we have people who've committed a crime, driving under the influence, that never show up for court, and they slip through the system. And we don't want that to happen, because exactly what you're saying, we want our community to be safer. And so this is an instance where immigration enforcement and criminal enforcement work together very well, I think, in making our city safer. And this training, I believe, will give us those tools that when we use them correctly, and I believe this council has been very clear as to how we would like to use these tools, and I think this MOU is and what we're giving the authorization for is consistent with those instructions we've given. Now, Mr. Brady's going to tell everyone where I completely missed.
No, actually, Mayor, I only support you in everything you do, and just to confirm that. Actually, if you'll read in the agreement, it does state, participating Mesa Police Department personnel performing immigration-related duties pursuant to this MOA will be Mesa PD officers assigned to detention operations supported by ICE. Those participating Mesa Police Department personnel will exercise their immigration-related authorities only during the course of their normal duties while assigned to the Mesa PD jail correctional facilities. And really what this is doing, Mayor and Council, is allowing, right now we have maybe one person that has access to this database. It's very important when an arrest is made and they're brought into our facilities that we know who we're dealing with, and we can check them against a database. And that's what this training allows us to do, is it really allows us to have that identification database that we can use for criminal.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because that's a very important thing. People, because 287G has become such a politicized.
Yeah, it's much, people have made a lot more about it than what it really
is. And what it really is access to the database, which now we don't have, and you won't get unless you have this training, because you don't know how to use it. And so as our officers get trained and they know how to use the database, which is the database that ties into the Immigration, Customs, and Enforcement. And right now, if we think somebody is here illegally, we have to call ICE and say, gee, we think they're here. And then ICE will take over, or may or may not take over. And this person many times goes through the system and the process, like we said, they never get screened for that. And then because of their immigration status, they evade criminal prosecution. And that's something that we simply cannot allow. That's a giant loophole that we can't allow to go on. And that's why we have pursued this training for this particular purpose for so long. And I think it plugs that gap. Loophole isn't a good one, but it plugs that gap that gives us tools that will keep criminals off the street. And that includes many people who use their immigration status as a way to evade future or evade prosecution, and we have seen the very, very tragic results of that, because unfortunately what we've experienced is when you have multiple offenders who happen to be illegals and have killed somebody, and sometimes these, I think if you look at what's happened last year, it's the third or fourth or fifth time they have three or four or five DUIs on their record, and they slip through the cracks every single time and were never fully prosecuted, or they never showed up or whatever. And so I feel very comfortable with the way that we're using this, and I feel it's consistent with what we want to do, which is to protect our citizens from crime in a way that also protects us in our rights that we have as Americans, rights that are God-given and that are defined in our Constitution. This, to me, represents a good balance between those two, not objectives, but requirements. So thank you very much, Mr. Egan.
Thank you. That's reassuring. I can only hope that this doesn't become a Pandora's box, that another city council farther down the line may not have the enlightened perspective. But
I'm hoping reassured that if that's by the case, you can enlighten them for us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, we have a motion to approve 5J from Councilmember Kavanaugh, a second from Councilmember Richens. Any further discussion? Please vote. The vote is 6-0 in the affirmative, with Councilmember Summers absent. The motion carries. We'll now move on to item 6D, which is repealing of Title V, Chapter 12 of the Mesa City Code related to massage establishments and adopting a new Title V, Chapter 12, that strengthens oversight of massage establishments. We have two citizens. Oops. All right, well, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Councilman Kavanaugh. Now, this is the introduction to this ordinance, which means we're not taking final, or this action, which means we are not taking final action tonight. Final action will be taken in 2 weeks, and so you will have a chance to discuss this. And regardless of how we vote, this will not take effect till the second vote. So Ms. Dickinson and Mr. Youngblood, I don't know if you still want to speak to that. You certainly may. If you'd like to come back in 2 weeks, you may do that also. So your option. Speak tonight? Okay, Mr. Youngblood, we'll hear first from Richard Youngblood, and he'll be followed by Deborah Dickinson. Mr. Youngblood, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you, sir. I think the change is needed, and I welcome it. I want to talk about 5-12-9H. It states in there, adequate manager coverage during all times the establishment is open for business. This is going to require the establishment to hire two managers so that the state mandated break times are adhered to. When a manager goes to lunch, it's not really effective to close your business down. So we have to have another manager on staff. I think that's going to put an unfair burden on the establishment. I think having a manager there is a good idea, or licensing managers, but not requiring them to be there every minute the store is open. I think that that puts a burden that's not shared by any other business within this city, and I think that you should reconsider that part of that. 5-12-9H. The second issue I had was 5-12-11-A-7. Immigration and authorization to work verification. It states in there on A-7 that an acceptable form of identification would be an I-94 form with a photograph. There is no such form. An I-94, it does not have a photograph on it. So I would suggest that you take that out of there. It doesn't exist. Also, I'd like to pose the question why the permanent resident card is not mentioned in that. That's a document put out by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. It is the document that allows you into this country and to work within this country. And it does have a photograph on it and would be the most commonly available document that an immigrant would have. The last issue would be 5-12-18-A-1. It has to do with having a massage establishment on the same premises as a bar and other things. My concern was the same premises. Are we referring to the actual, if it's suites, the actual suite or the complex? And I don't know when you say premises what that is. It wasn't in the definition, so I wanted to get clarity on that if we could. And also on that same issue, if it if it is within the same complex, what about businesses that are already existing, have current licenses, and have bars or whatever that are in that same complex? So I think that issue needs to be addressed. That was it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Youngblood. And I saw our city attorney writing feverishly as you were making notes, so I'm sure that many of those things we'll follow up on. Thank you. Ms. Deborah Dickinson, you'd like to speak?
Thank you for allowing me. I have some concerns. We had a wonderful meeting about a month ago. All the massage establishment owners were invited to give feedback on what they proposed as a much different ordinance to put in than the one that's attached to your agenda tonight. And at that meeting, we were led to believe that in a couple of weeks after Nancy Sorensen, who's the attorney, wrote up the proposed ordinance, the proposed new ordinance, taking into account our feedback, that we were then, when that was in draft form, still going to be invited back to another meeting to review it and make more recommendations, comments, whatever, that would be taken into account. And that meeting hasn't happened yet. I was kind of concerned when it's on the agenda tonight and then it's going to do this hearing in 2 weeks. So I'm on a short notice side of this. I tried to stay in touch with people and find out what's going on. And the people I talked to in the city of Mesa actually didn't tell me that this was going on tonight. I found that out through help of another friend who was almost on the Tempe City Council and knows about these things. And so my concern is that the massage therapist owners, we had this meeting and they cut it off at 7:30, even though we weren't done talking about stuff. It was just time to be over. And now most of them aren't here because they don't know about this, because they're waiting for the phone call to invite them to that next meeting that hasn't happened yet and may not happen in the next 2 weeks, because it was supposed to have already been 2 or 3 weeks ago. And so I feel like we're being almost intentionally shut out of the loop. I want to say I read this 30-some-odd page document, and most of it looks good, but I do have a couple of concerns about things that are in it that are going to possibly seriously affect me in some negative ways, and I'm willing to wait and talk about that in 2 weeks if that's the time. But he was talking about stuff tonight, so I can tell you what they are if you want to just know.
Why don't we do? I mean, there's some big concerns.
We can certainly get with the group again. I apologize that it happened sooner, but we can have a meeting this week if we have to, or before we come back again the second time.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what's and it's happened before. We want to make sure that citizens have appropriate opportunity to have input, and I don't think anyone would certainly intentionally shut you out.
I hope not.
Might they have lost your phone number? Who knows?
Well, I called and followed up, and so I know that that's not the case.
Well, sometimes communication snafus do happen.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is that we're not going to put anything through that we don't think people have had an adequate opportunity to have input on, if that's how the process had started. And so what we'll do is that, this is why you introduce like this, so you can have chance for things come up. And if there are issues like you just brought up, we can follow up with them. I think, Councilman, you have a comment, Councilman Richards?
Yeah, I just wanted to confirm that we're still going to go forward introducing tonight. And this sounds like there's a meeting that will be held between now and 2 weeks from now. If there's some substantial changes, we'll obviously have to reintroduce it. But if there's not, if we've vetted this properly and we've got it right, I'd like the opportunity to pass it in 2 weeks if we can.
Okay, well, let's meet with the group, because if we do have to make changes, we would have to reintroduce. So, but let's make that assessment after we have the meeting. We'll have to remember one of the things we're trying to do here, and maybe there's some room here, is we're really trying to stay consistent with the other ordinances that are out there. And maybe, I don't believe, if there's some unique language in here or some outdated language, we can certainly work with the group on that. Let us have the meeting this week or before the 2 weeks up, and we'll make a decision. We can come back to council and decide. I would suggest go ahead, and if you want to move forward with the introduction, that's fine. And if we can work out the issues without changes, that's great. If not, we may have to come back and reintroduce with the changes and then move forward.
Well, it sounds to me, even from what we heard from Mr. Youngblood, I didn't hear any substantive changes, although there were some, certainly some cleanup and some language and some things that we certainly could clarify. And the question is that whether we want to move ahead and then come back later and clean those up, or whether we just want to clean them up right now before we enact and take care of that now, if they need to be cleaned up. For example, potential language issues such as immigration forms, things like that, which, you know, we may want to clean up, or we may want to just move ahead.
I am seriously concerned. I'm a sole proprietor. I am just only me in my office. One of the concerns is a requirement for permanent signage that says massage therapist. I work by referral only. I don't deal with the icky riffraff that you guys are trying to figure out how to arrest. I don't want anything to do with them. In places I've worked in the past, my experience has been that because there's a sign on the door that says massage therapist, every time a news station runs one of those blurbs to build their ratings, they give cross streets and they say, and there are half a dozen more places right in walking distance of there. And then all the little creepy guys start showing up where I work. And I'm actually scared because now I'm not in a group of other therapists. It's just me. And I don't want these people coming to my place. I just don't. Also, the thing with the signs is this feels like it might be a knee-jerk reaction to a town hall meeting that you had where some citizens said, we're concerned about all the massage parlors shop popping up in the area. And boy, if they see more signs, that's not going to probably make them feel better. They're not seeing mine. And I'm not bringing any, you know, I'm bringing business to Mesa. I've got people who come from all over the valley to see me. And they eat here, they shop here, they go to shows at the Mesa Arts Center, they, you know, buy stuff, they, you know, because they're here to see me. But this could move me out of Mesa if this is a requirement, or set me on an out-call only, and then those people won't be coming here. And the other concern is, oh, heck, I'm nervous, but I wrote it down.
Take your time, don't worry.
The requirement to have photographs of all the therapists on the wall. I hate having my picture taken. I know it's up there, you know, but it's okay, and we're required to have our license, which my license has my photograph on it. I absolutely want to support the police department. I know they need to know who we are and what we look like. I'm wondering if maybe instead of having that, used to be one of those things we said in massage school, you know, you go into the illicit places, first thing they do, they parade the massage therapists out so that the guys can look at the pretty girls and pick which one they want. And I just feel like having everybody's picture on the wall is going to actually feed that instead of helping the police, but maybe they should have our photograph taken in the police department by somebody who works for you guys. In the file that the police take out, everybody who works there has to have their picture, you know, every year. So the police have that. They already know who's working there. They don't have to look on the wall and see it, and then it's not okay. Going to... Those are my concerns.
So. All right. And Councilman Cavanaugh has a question or comment.
I think you raise good concerns. I do want to assure you it's not a knee-jerk reaction. This is something that we've been working on now for more than a year, and working very closely with the police department. And our goal is to have our statutes mirror the statutes in the other Valley communities so that if you go from one community to the next, these rules are the same. And the rules that we have here are rules that are in effect in other Valley communities that have not created a lot of issues. But I think it's important for you to have the discussion with the police department to raise the specific concerns, but also to understand from the department's perspective why the particular recommendation is being made. And so I look forward to seeing what
discussion
will be.
Sure.
Well,
we'll proceed with that.
3 weeks ago, and we haven't had that other meeting. Yeah.
Well, I can assure you we'll have that other meeting, and we'll hear you. I mean, yeah. Our goal and objective has been from day one to help, and you've pointed out some good reasons, the legitimate businesses, and to weed out those that are not legitimate. And I think you're suffering the consequences that this community is suffering. You wouldn't be having to do this if we didn't have people who were conducting business in a very illegitimate way. And they weren't there so they could serve people in a legitimate way. And unfortunately, that creates consequences for all of us. And we don't like it, and we wish we didn't. We wish this wasn't necessary. We believe it's necessary. We think you've both raised some very good points tonight, and I'm especially concerned that there may have been a breakdown in communication and there was a follow-up that did not take place. So I think that we'll make sure that happens. Right now, from a procedural standpoint, we do have a motion on the floor to approve this. And once again, even if this is approved, the meetings will still take place.
That would be deferred.
The meetings will still take place. And if there are substantive changes that we decide, then it will be deferred, because we cannot introduce an ordinance, then change it, then bring it back changed. It will have to be reintroduced. So there is a process in place to protect us from these last-minute changes. And I'm sure that if in your follow-up meeting there are issues that come up that it's decided, yeah, we need to make that change, we'll defer the final point. But we do have a motion on the floor right now from Councilmember Richens, a second by Councilmember Kavanaugh. And Mr. Youngblood, do you have
to urge you not to rush into making your final vote on this until it's right. We've seen the effects of that from quite a few years ago. And I just want to urge that we don't do that again.
Thank you very much. And as we have that follow-up meeting and process the additional information you've given us, I guarantee you that we'll look at it very carefully, and we will not make that.
Also, I recently moved my office here from the city of Scottsdale, so I am familiar with how Scottsdale runs their facility thing. And these were not requirements in the city of Scottsdale.
Well, thanks for this will not be the last. I'm sure we'll follow up with you and make sure we have that meeting or that communication, however it may take place.
Thank you.
We do have a motion and a second on the floor. Is there any further discussion or questions? Vice Mayor.
I understand introducing it tonight because we've wanted to get this moved forward and done. And I understand that we can reintroduce if there are substantive changes to be done. Is there a rush to introduce it tonight? Is there any harm in waiting till we resolve things so that we don't have to go through the process of reintroduction? Because if we introduce it tonight, we will have a lot of people here on the 19th, and we may just be reintroducing something new, possibly. And it just is confusion. I'm trying to simplify and reduce confusion for that community.
Well, you raise a valid point. And we'd have to go back to the motion maker because we do have a motion on the floor. So we're going to have to vote on that one way or another.
Right.
So the question is either if we do want to defer this and check out what people have to say, then either the motion will need to be withdrawn or we'll need to vote it down. Well, we can't vote it. Can we vote it down? Does that have any other negative things other than, or can we defer it now that the motion's been put in place?
You can do either one, Mayor. I mean, you can certainly take the vote.
I'm looking for you to make a decision for me, and you give me options. Go ahead.
If you choose to vote on it and it is voted down, the council can certainly instruct the staff to follow through with the meeting and bring it back after the meeting has been completed. If you simply vote it down with no further direction, the staff is left with, do we continue or is the motion, is the issue ended? If you vote it in now, and it is introduced, as Mr. Brady said, we can still go forward and have the meeting. And if there are no changes, you can take the final action up or down in 2 weeks. If there are changes, we would then have to bring it back and reintroduce it. So council can really do whichever.
Councilman Richens, does that change your view, or do you want to move ahead?
No, I just assume before, I think we have it largely correct. There may be a few tweaks that happen, but I think we really need to get this in place. I'm all about community involvement and opportunities for people to give their input, and I think we've done that. I think we've vetted through what other cities have been doing, so I'd like to move forward tonight. If there are, maybe there are some things that we missed, but I think we might largely have it right. I'd like to get it in place, see how it works for a little while, and maybe a few months down the road we tweak it more, but I'm not going to withdraw the motion.
Okay, motion stands. Any other questions or comments? I'm going to support moving it forward, but just with the idea that we have the meeting and with the understanding that there may be some changes. I think there's some very relevant issues brought up tonight. Mainly, most of them are housekeeping. I think we can change that. I don't know that they change the substance, but there are some things that I think do have the potential to have some substance for certain operators. And Ms. Dickinson brought a couple of those up. Mr. Youngblood brought a couple up. So I'm hoping that in the next 2 weeks we have the meeting, whatever it is, or the communication that'll follow up. And I'm hoping that we're open to the idea that if there are changes that we believe improve the law, and I always want to improve it, that we are willing to get the word out and say, listen, we're not going to move on this, or we're going to withdraw it, or we're going to change it, or we're going to vote it down simply because we think there's something better. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to support this, but with the caveat that we that this is not the final say and that we do make sure that we listen to those who have what I believe are legitimate concerns and I believe are some good comments that will help improve the law. But I agree with Councilman Richards, though. I think we're 98% of the way there, 99% maybe, but there's that 1%, 2% that may have some things that are significant enough that would cause us to have to tweak it a bit to make it the best law we can have. So it's not good enough just to have a good law. We need to have the best one we can have, especially in this situation. Vice Mayor.
Well, on that line, then, I will just ditto what you have to say because I don't want to do a vote against it and then have it misconstrued publicly why I voted no.
So you're voting for it so that they won't know that you're voting against it, but you're voting... Okay, we got it.
Vote. I just don't like misinterpretations.
Please vote. Oop. Councilmember Higgins, recast. The vote is 6-0 in the affirmative, but I think we have instructions to the staff along with that vote as to how to proceed with the communication and the reporting back to us prior to 2 weeks. Thank you very much. Not quite yet. The next item on the agenda is item from citizens present. Ms. Crocker, do we have any requests to speak?
No requests, Mayor.
Now we have a move to adjourn by Councilmember Richens. Any second from the Vice Mayor. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you so very much for your input, and thank you for being here. Appreciate it.